Welcome back to the Mastering Your Fertility podcast. This show is all about empowering couples with the knowledge they need to get pregnant, stay pregnant, and have the healthiest baby possible. I'm Kristen Cornett, a functional nutritional therapy practitioner and owner of an online fertility practice called Tiny Feet. I work with women and couples all over the world to optimize their health and fertility so they can build the families they've always dreamed of. You can learn more about me on my website at tinyfeet.co. Thanks so much for tuning in with me today. Before we get started, I just want to share a couple of awesome free resources that can help you move forward on your journey. First is the free Are You Healthy Enough to Get Pregnant quiz that will ask you about symptoms in five areas of health that are foundational to fertility and provide you with some practical tips on how to get started addressing each area. Next is the free mini course on how to choose the best prenatal supplements, which walks you through the specific nutrients you need to support your fertility and a healthy pregnancy, and how to find high-quality supplements to meet your needs. And lastly, if you're wanting more individualized advice for where to go next on your journey, or you're thinking that you'd like to work with someone one-on-one, you can go ahead and schedule a free 20-minute phone consult with me. You can find links to all three of these resources through the link in this week's episode description. You're listening to episode 85, and today I'm interviewing Elise Ash, who is the founder of a fertility mentorship company called Fruitful Fertility. Those of us who have struggled with our fertility know how frustrating and isolating the experience can be. And it's not always easy to open up to friends or family, and it's difficult to receive the support we need from people who have never been through what we're dealing with and simply don't know what to say or how to help. I invited Elise on the show to talk about why it's so important to get the right kind of support through this journey and the solution that she and her husband came up with to match people who are currently going through infertility with those who have already completed their journey in a mentor-mentee relationship. I'm excited to share Fruitful Fertility with all of you as an option for adding to your support network and building a relationship with someone who knows what you're going through and can offer you an ear, a shoulder, or a helping hand as you continue on your path to parenthood. In today's interview, Elise and I discuss her personal infertility story and what she went through to become a mother, why it's so important for us to find people we can truly confide in as we go through fertility struggles, her perspective on opening up to friends and family, and some advice on dealing with uncomfortable conversations, the story behind Fruitful Fertility and what ultimately led Elise and her husband to start the company, and what you can expect from Fruitful and the logistics of how the service works. So let me introduce you to Elise and we'll get started. Elise Ash is the founder and CEO of Fruitful Fertility, whose mission is to make infertility suck less for the 1 in 8 couples affected by infertility and miscarriage. Elise created Fruitful with her husband, Brad Ash, after the couple experienced infertility themselves and were shocked by the loneliness and isolation of the experience. Today, Fruitful has about 5,000 members and has been covered by the Los Angeles Times, Business Insider, Parents Magazine, and many other publications. Elise began her career over 12 years ago as a copywriter at advertising agencies, making creative campaigns for both big brands and fledgling startups. Elise is also a Moth Storytelling Award winner, a 2019 40 Under 40 honoree by the Minneapolis St. Paul Business Journal, a speaker, writer, and very grateful mom. To learn more about Fruitful, please visit fruitfulfertility.org. You can also find links to the website and some additional resources from Elise in the show notes for this episode, which you can find through the link in the episode description. All right. Welcome, Elise. Ash, thank you so much for joining me today on Mastering Your Fertility. I'm excited to have you here.
Thanks so much for having me. Excited to be here.
Absolutely. Can you start off by sharing a little bit about your personal fertility journey?
Yeah, for sure. I think it began the way a lot of people's fertility journey begins, where, you know, you spend a lot of your teenage years and young adult years trying not to get pregnant. And then you one day have a conversation with your partner and decide, hey, let's give it a try, or let's not try anymore. Let's see what happens. Let's pull the goalie. You know, you're youngish, you're healthy-ish, you know, no clear medical issues yet. And you just figure, let's go for it. And then we're really surprised kind of month over month seeing negative pregnancy tests, and really starting to wonder, like, is this normal? Does it take people this long to get pregnant? Should we be worried? Am I being dramatic? Is this something that I've jinxed, you know, what's happening. And really month over month, getting further, deeper and deeper down the Google rabbit hole, finding more and more people to talk to, which can be both helpful and sometimes also overwhelming and triggering, and learning a lot about my body, going to different doctors. And eventually after a year and a half, trying on our own, going to the OB, trying Clomid, all like your base level tests and everything coming back pretty normal, deciding to go to our reproductive endocrinologist. I'm based in Minneapolis, Minnesota. So finding a doctor here that we really liked, and learning at one of our first baseline ultrasound appointments that I had two cysts on one of my ovaries. And so we received a diagnosis of endometriosis there. And I will never forget, the doctor said to us, she said, well, I have good news and bad news. The good news is we know why you're not getting pregnant. The bad news is, you know, you have cysts on your ovaries. So we're going to have to work around that. And so really that was a pivotal moment in our fertility journey, because all of a sudden there was a reason, and there was a medical reason why this wasn't happening. And I think that was huge for my marriage, because all of a sudden it was like, see, I told you so. And I think in our dynamic, there was a little bit of, well, you're, you know, being a little bit dramatic about this. You're blowing this out of proportion. There's no reason to think anything is wrong. And all of a sudden I had like a medical reason why this wasn't happening. I could point to and be like, see, told you, like something was weird with my body. I've known it for, you know, a year and a half, and now I have proof. So that was a huge changing point in our experience. We then decided to go right into IVF. So we didn't do any IUIs. We basically went from Clomid to IVF. That was a decision we made because we were paying out of pocket and we didn't have high odds of an IUI working. So we decided to take the money we would have spent on IUIs and put it directly into IVF.
Yeah.
So we did our first round of IVF. We decided to do a frozen embryo transfer to do genetic testing on the embryos. We had two embryos make it to blast, and they both came back abnormal. And so that was probably the lowest part in our journey. I think we had assumed that IVF would just solve everything. And okay, if you pay a certain amount of money, you can expect, you know, ideal results. And I think that was a huge wake-up call to us that IVF is not like a one-way ticket to parenthood. It's definitely something that is not foolproof and is still not promised. And so really mourned that loss of that first cycle. Took a couple months to figure out if we wanted to do it again. I was feeling really devastated by that experience and wasn't sure if I was up for it. And it was actually after talking to my mother-in-law, who had convinced me, you know, are you ready to stop trying now? Is this something you're going to look at later and wish you had done another round? And I think that was kind of the gentle nudge I needed to really ask myself that. So kind of geared up, we did a second round. I think we kind of talked about, okay, this might be our last cycle regardless of what happens. And then might want to look at other options after that. I'm a type A person who likes a lot of plans and backup plans. So I always felt comfortable having, okay, if this doesn't work, here's like the other plan, or here's our other track we can shift to if we need to. So for me, it was helpful to have these kinds of different backup plans if needed. So we did a second round of IVF that went a lot better. They switched up my protocol. I think they could use a lot of the data that they had for my first cycle and help modify it a little bit. So my second cycle went way better. I had double better results, double better eggs, double better fertilization rate, double better blasts. So we had five blasts and sent those off for testing, and three came back normal. Awesome. And so that was huge. And really, I think was kind of the hope we needed in the middle of so much disappointment and so much fear. And then we were very lucky where our first frozen embryo transfer worked. So we now have a toddler and a couple embryos frozen still. So that's where we are. And, you know, that experience, I think, you know, you can say it in 5 minutes, 10 minutes, but I mean, it was years and it took so long and it was so emotionally devastating. And I think I was just really surprised that so many people go through this and yet it was still so isolating. And I think that was the sticky part to me going through it, was like, I know I'm not the only person dealing with this, but why does it still feel that way?
Absolutely. I think that is a really common feeling on this journey with women who are going through it. I think it's hard to talk about, even though even the people that have like dug in a little bit and realized that this is a much more common issue for women than you would have thought before going through it. I mean, you don't really think about the difficulty or the potential for difficulty in getting pregnant, like you said, when you spend so many years trying to prevent pregnancy on purpose. It's not something you think about like, oh, what are the rates of trouble conceiving for couples in the US? Like, you don't think of that when you're actively trying to prevent pregnancy.
No, and I was thinking a lot about my own privilege, like through the experience, and thinking like, wow, I'm already like a pretty open person about personal things in my life. Like, I'm an extrovert. I'm someone who likes to connect on personal stuff. And it was still so hard for me, and it was still so hard to find my community and the support network I needed. It was so hard to ask for help. I remember like really feeling weird about going to a support group. And I'm an extrovert who lives in like a metropolitan area where I have access to stuff. I had financial resources. Like, I pretty much should have been all set. Like, great, go to therapy, go do your thing, like check, check, check. And it was still terrible. And so I kept thinking, like, what about these people who might not have an understanding family, might not have access to care, might not be able to go to a therapist, might not be able to go to a support group? Like, what are these people doing or getting that can help them? And that was sort of where I couldn't stop thinking, was like, wow, this community is so strong, and there is no need to suffer silently. There are so many ways that we can use technology and the goodness of this community to help one another. Like, why is this still so isolating?
Yeah, totally agree. And there is so much more access to information and so much more access to different ways to connect with other people that we couldn't possibly have fathomed, you know, even a decade or two ago. We never would have had the opportunities that we have now to connect with other people. What do you think your journey would have been like if you hadn't had the resources that you had or the ability to seek out the help? Like, why is this so important? Why do we need this so badly when we're on this journey?
I think it would have been a much more traumatic experience. Like, already it was traumatic, but I think feeling shame or feeling like it was a secret would have been a lot harder for me. I derived a lot of value from being able to talk things through. So eventually I did end up going to, it was sort of a support group. It was called like a fertility yoga class. Mm-hmm. But the first, you know, 30 minutes or an hour of the class were pretty much support group style, go around in a circle, you know, introduce yourself, update people as to where you were. And it was the same group of maybe like 20 to 30 women who would come in and out. And then we would practice like restorative yoga after. So I did start to get comfortable sharing my story and saying the words. And I think that was huge. That made such a difference to me. And if I wasn't able to do that and I had to kind of process everything internally or in secret, I think that just would have been bad for me, because I am someone who can get stuck in these, you know, spirals in my brain, which I think a lot of women do that. But where you can just get into this like negative self-talk cycle, and it can get really dark, and it can get really like, my body's broken, I'm never gonna get pregnant. Basically the opposite of affirmations and like everything you're supposed to do. It's like, you're broken, you're unlovable, your marriage is trash, nothing's gonna work, why are you trying? Like, and I was just having that come so naturally that I think it was helpful to me to hear other people help kind of bring me out of that.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that's something that a lot of people are still missing on their journey because of the stigma, because of the silence. What was it like for you with your close family and friends? Like, how did those conversations go? Were you open with them? You know, I know that there are a lot of women who are struggling with that piece of the journey. Like, how much do you tell people? How much do you tell your family and your friends? Sometimes people open up a little bit and they maybe get some unhelpful feedback, or people say some things that are maybe not terribly educated about the whole fertility issue. So what advice do you have for couples who are dealing with that and struggling with how much to share with their community?
Well, personally, it was a bit of a dance. Like, I felt like we would dip our toe. My husband and I both would kind of dip our toe and reveal a little bit, maybe get some feedback that we didn't like, or maybe get some advice that was unwarranted, and then we'd retreat. We would share less. Or we would decide, okay, we're going to confide in this person. And basically I felt like I was giving people the opportunity to show up for us. But without, not without like tons of disappointment and tons of unhelpful, advice and feedback and things to think about and a huge lack of education, which is really something I think, we in general as a society don't do a great job of educating ourselves as to like female biology and fertilization and, like sex ed in this country has seriously,
it's so bad,
underperformed. Yes. And it's something like, I don't know, you take sex ed when you're in ninth grade and then when you're 31, you kind of forget everything. You're like, okay, I know I ovulate, but I don't know when. I know I'm supposed to know there's like a cycle day something. But you don't know anywhere near as much as you should. So a lot of it is on you to educate yourself and then educate other people near you. I think what I would say to other people trying to decide like who to confide in, and this is a bit stealing from Brené Brown. It's a lot stealing from Brené Brown. But she always says, you don't owe anyone your story. And so you don't owe anyone any information. Your story is your story, and you decide who gets to hear it, how much they get to hear. And I really think you can give people the opportunity to show up for you and support you. And if they're unable to do that, that's a good learning opportunity for you to see, okay, who can I trust with this? And I think also sometimes it's good to have like one or two people you super trust who you think are going to be able to hold space for you, who maybe you've trusted them before. Because the other thing is once you tell people, you can't untell them. And so they always know. And then sometimes they're like asking you, you know, follow-up questions like, oh, how did that thing go? Or did this cycle work? Or what's going on? So as long as you're aware, you know, once you tell, you can't untell. But what you can do is set new boundaries. So if you do tell someone and you don't like the way they've been showing up, you can say, yeah, you know, we're still trying and, you know, we're getting through it. You know, you can be vague. You don't have to tell everyone like, I have my retrieval on Friday and I'm feeling like this and check in with me this day and here's my beta is on this date. Like, you can decide at any given time the level of information you choose to share. I think sometimes people think it's very binary. Like, I'm not going to tell anyone or I'm going to like post about it on Facebook all the time. I'm going to be an advocate for this. Yeah. And I think like that's doing yourself a disservice. You really get to decide, you know, who you tell and what you tell them.
I agree. This is a great opportunity to set boundaries. And I think there are a lot of people, and I think women in particular struggle a little bit with this, with the boundaries piece. I think we are culturally educated to be pleasers. Like if someone asks us for something, we're supposed to acquiesce and just give them what they ask for. So if they're asking us for information, we do kind of feel that natural pull or obligation toward giving them whatever they asked for. But I think, and boundaries, I can personally relate to something with boundaries. It's just been a huge struggle for me in lots of different areas of my life. And I don't really have a lot of boundaries about my personal story at this point. I mean, I have an entire podcast that I talk about it all the time.
That ship has sailed. Yeah.
That ship has sailed with that. But, you know, in other areas of my life, I have struggled with boundaries and it is difficult for me to say no to people or to say, hey, I'm not comfortable with this or this that's going on, or I don't like this behavior, or I'm going to respond this way if this happens. And this is a good opportunity for women to learn that boundaries are important.
And it's a good way to practice communication. And I think something I was doing a lot in my friendships when we were trying to conceive is I was basically like making people guess how they should show up for me. And then I was kind of like judging who was there and who wasn't and who was doing it right and who was doing it wrong. And I had my little like Arya from Game of Thrones list of like who was in and who was out and who was like supporting me and able to show up and who was disappointing me. And I think what I wish I had done if I had a time machine is go back and actually be really explicit about what I needed. Because I think your friends, they care about you and they want to support you. They want to show up for you, but everybody has different needs. And like your needs can change every day. One day you might really want to talk about this and you might want to like sit and cry. And another day you might not want to talk about it at all. And I think if you can be really clear with your support network about what's helpful to you, if you give them the answers to the test instead of like waiting for them to, you know, say the wrong thing or ask the wrong question or be positive when you really don't want that, that's huge. So if you can say, hey, you know, thanks so much. I really just want to vent for like 30 minutes and I don't want to hear any like positive, like, you know, praise or like, it's going to be okay. Like, can you just listen to me and can I just vent to you for 20 minutes? Or, hey, you know what? I don't want to talk about this today. Can we just like watch a movie on Netflix at the same time and text through it? Like, if you know what you want, or if you know what feels good, like, be clear about that.
Yeah, I think it's also hard for us to ask for what we want. That's another thing that we're not really taught how to do in like very explicit terms. Say, this is what I want. This is how you can support me. Please do this on this particular day and maybe something else on a different day.
But I think the cool thing is that like people want to help and people want to help you. And I think there's a lot of freedom in knowing like, oh, if I do this thing, this is helpful to my friend. And you can feel like that's doing your friend a favor because they can feel like they're showing up in the right way. I mean, if you think about all the times you had a friend who maybe lost someone who was really special to them or was dealing with their own medical crisis. And we always ask like, well, what can I do? Like, just tell me what I can do. It's like, we're constantly looking for like things we can do to show up for the people we love. And if there are concrete things you need help with, if it's, hey, could you run to the pharmacy and like pick up, you know, my next set of stims for me, like that'd be really helpful. Hey, can you go? I'm really craving this thing. You know, if we can give people tasks or give them those answers in ways we want them to show up, I mean, that's just like such a great way to get people to support you in ways that feel good for both of you.
Yeah. And I think another thing that's cool about this is that there is so much access to information now. Like if someone doesn't know how to support you or they don't really understand, like they've never come to the fertility discussion before, they're totally unaware of how many women are struggling with this, what some of the major thoughts and feelings are around it, what they may be going through, if they're choosing, you know, to go through IVF or they need to go through IVF, like that's a different animal too than trying naturally or, you know, doing other medicated cycles that aren't IVF, because IVF is pretty intense. But there's so much access to information where you can say like, hey, listen to this podcast. It will really help you understand what I'm going through. Or hey, read this book. It will really help you understand like how to support me or what I might need at different times during this journey. So that's cool as well, that this is coming to light so much more in different ways. And there are people like you and people like me, you know, putting information out there in the world from different perspectives to offer that to women, but also to offer that to their families and friends and partners who can understand better by consuming some of this information.
The other cool thing that happens is, you know, when you hear about something, all of a sudden, you know, your ears perk up more when you hear it other places. So somebody who might never have thought about infertility or miscarriage before, all of a sudden they're watching Real Housewives and they see a plot line about IVF. Like my own mom had no idea, even after we had been through IVF, she didn't get it to like the Real Housewife lady did IVF, and she saw it on TV and was like, oh my gosh, Elise, like I can't believe you went through all that. I'm like, really? I feel like I told you. But she didn't really get it until she had seen somebody else like stick themselves with needles 3 times a day for 10 days. Like, she didn't really get it. So I think that's the other cool thing is like when you share your story, you're also letting other people see other examples of, you know, what you're going through.
Yeah, absolutely. So one other thing I want to touch on, and I feel like this is something that's really not well understood, is that there are lots of women and couples who go through IVF and they're successful. They get at least one child, maybe another out of it as well. And people kind of assume that once you have a baby, that means that your fertility journey is over and that there's nothing to be sad about. But there can be a lot of lasting trauma from just the process of going through infertility, or, hey, those people don't know whether you're done having kids or not. Like, are you going to need to go through another cycle? Like there's all these thoughts and feelings that come along with this that don't just go away because you got pregnant and had a baby.
Yeah. I think that's something that people really don't want to hear when you're trying to have a baby. I think what you want to hear is like, when you have your baby or when you adopt or when you decide to live child-free, like this goes away. This is like a concentrated period of your life. You deal with it and then you move on. And then all of a sudden you're looking at daycares and you have other problems. Like that's true to an extent. But I think the thing about infertility is it's a trauma and it changes the way you look at life. It changes the way you look at yourself and your marriage or your relationship. It changes your relationships with the people around you, your family and friends. It can change so much, and it doesn't just get solved when there's a child or when there's some type of closure. And so I think understanding that is huge, and being able to prepare yourself, because like you said, if IVF works, if your IUI works, if something works and you get pregnant, you're still every day wondering, like, when is this going to be taken away from me? And maybe, I mean, you might not be. I was wondering that. I was like, I'll get specific with that. Like, my whole pregnancy, you know, I maybe have like 5 photos of me being pregnant because I was so scared of jinxing it, of getting excited, of getting close. You know, we waited to the last minute to get all the baby stuff because I had just heard so many stories and I didn't trust the universe at all. And then when you become a parent, you have your own set of challenges and guilt. And anytime you're unhappy or you're struggling or your baby's crying or you're tired or you have a toddler who's having a tantrum and you think, oh my gosh, I miss my old life, you feel terrible because you remember how badly you wished for this and you remember how badly you wanted it. And you made deals with the universe. So like, I just remember being like, I will never complain again about anything. I will never complain about pregnancy. I'll never complain. I remember specifically, I was 8 months pregnant and I was washing a lot of like the onesies and little socks and all the laundry and stuff that you're supposed to wash before you put it all away in the drawers. And I remember thinking like, I promise if this baby comes here safely and is alive, I will never, ever complain about folding a baby's clothing or doing laundry. Like, I was like, I will never complain about like little baby socks. This is always going to be cute. And I'm never going to be begrudgingly folding like little onesies. And I remember like making that deal with the universe. And it's just something that doesn't go away. It changes the whole way you view life, you view your relationships, you view your faith. I mean, it can really disrupt a lot of things in your life. And I think if you understand that and you give yourself grace and you learn that this isn't something that just like magically goes away, that can be like really helpful in having that awareness before you're in that situation.
Yeah. I think there are a lot of medical issues that people understand as traumatic. I don't think that most people lump infertility into that category of things like cancer or serious autoimmune diagnoses or other chronic illnesses that don't have any cure in medicine. And, you know, studies have shown that infertility is just as stressful or traumatic a diagnosis as any of those other chronic illnesses. Like, it's been compared to cancer in terms of the impact that it has on the mental and emotional well-being of the person who's receiving that diagnosis. And I think it is important for people to understand that just because you get pregnant in this process does not make all of that trauma and those thoughts and feelings go away.
Well, and with infertility, it's a disease. It is a medical condition. So in that sense, it is similar to a cancer, but society doesn't see it as that. Like, even insurance doesn't even always see it like that. And so you feel like you're constantly having to validate your experience and prove how awful it is, when you would never ask someone who was diagnosed with cancer, you know, you would never be like, get over it, you're fine, relax. Yeah, exactly. Like, tell me all the reasons why this sucks. It's like, no, I very much understand. And because it's life or death sometimes, I mean, that's a huge difference. But I do think with infertility is often misunderstood and seen as like a social issue rather than like a medical condition. And so I do think that that is something like the universe just gaslights you so hard. Your friends do, your family does. And there was a study I read that said that dealing with infertility is the 4th most traumatic event a woman can experience. And that's huge. I mean, to even be able, I mean, it's terrible to have to rank it all. But on the other hand, I think it really shows that this isn't just like something you're sad about sometimes. It's like something that can really seep into your identity and affect every part of your life.
Yeah. And depending on how long you go through it too, I mean, the longer that you deal with something like that, the harder it is to then believe that it can happen for you, or, you know, the harder it becomes to kind of deal with the almost PTSD really of the experience, even after you get pregnant and have a baby. So I'm glad that we touched on that, because I think that that is an important thing for people to understand, and something that, you know, if there are people who are supporting women or couples that are going through infertility listening to this particular episode, I think that's something they need to know.
For sure. And I think like that is something that you should definitely be working with a mental health expert on, you know, dealing with trauma and PTSD. Those are very real things that can happen. And I think there are also some statistics around women who've dealt with infertility and miscarriage being at higher rates for postpartum depression and postpartum anxiety. So that is definitely something you should have up on your radar and be able to bring in a mental health expert if and when you really need that, because that can make all the difference in the world.
For sure. So let's talk about Fruitful, because I think that this is such a cool resource for women and couples who are going through this journey. So talk about what ultimately made you decide to start it. Obviously the fact that people need support, but like, what was that sort of catalyst for wanting to put this together?
So when I was going through infertility, I found a lot of comfort in this yoga support group thing I was going to. I met a lot of incredible women who turned into very dear friends. And we almost became almost like a cluster of cycle buddies where we were all kind of going through treatment around the same time, give or take a couple months. But one of the things that I didn't like about the group was that there was definitely an undertone of competitiveness with how many embryos did you get? You know, what transfer worked, what thing didn't work, who was doing a frozen transfer, who was doing a fresh transfer, who was your doctor? Like, it just became a little bit competitive, I guess, is like the best word to explain it. And the thing that sucked was eventually what would happen when you have a bunch of people trying to get pregnant, eventually people get pregnant and then they leave the group. So there was this weird period of time where people were just kind of like, quote unquote, graduating, which I hate that term when it comes to like infertility. It like implies that you've like worked harder or something. I don't know. I don't like it. But people would move on from the group after they would have their 8-week scan or move on to their OB. And it just all of a sudden the group dwindled. So we had like 25 women in this group. And then all of a sudden there were like 5 of us. And everyone else like either had their baby, they were going for another baby, they, you know, were in the middle of a treatment that was going well. And then there were kind of the rest of us. And we were like, wow, we feel like the slow people in the slow group. Like, I just think back to like having to run the mile in sixth grade and how like I was always the last one. And then like the fastest kid, he'd like lap me. I was like, wow, I'm like even the slowest in the slow group of the people I know who've been trying to get pregnant for years. I'm still like the last person. And I just remember having a lot of complicated feelings around that and eventually learning that the people that I love to talk to about infertility were people who had been through it, but were now on the other side of that experience. They were no longer actively going through it. So they were people who knew the language, they knew what to say, what not to say, they knew how to support me, but they weren't really like a threat to accidentally get pregnant and then have to tell me. I was very triggered by pregnant people and I didn't want to hear about people who were pregnant or going to their appointments. Like that I didn't want to hear. But I did want to hear from people who had had a similar experience and kind of what had made them decide to do certain things. And so that model was something I was thinking about a lot. I have someone very close to me who's in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was thinking about it similarly to AA, where like you go to an AA meeting, you know, and you find your sponsor, you don't pair up with somebody who's also trying to get sober. That would be a nightmare. You want to talk to someone who's like had a couple years of sobriety under their belt, who can empathize with you and knows like the language and the shorthand and can be there for you, but is a little bit further removed from that trauma and that experience. Not to say they're like 100% over it, but to say they are a little bit past where you are then. And so this was sort of the setup I had in my mind, like, okay, it'd be cool if you could have like a fertility big sister or like a fertility mentor, someone who wasn't actively going through it, but knew what you were going through. And my husband, Brad, is a computer developer. Oh. So he builds apps and websites and all that kind of stuff. And I was sharing this idea and he was kind of like, well, we should make it. I'm like, no, like someone else, someone should do this. Someone should make this. And he was like, we should make it. And when we decided to make it, we were still very much in the middle of our own fertility journey. It wasn't like, okay, we're done and now we're going to get back. It was like, we were still like doing in the middle of IVF and we didn't know how stuff was going to turn out. And so I think it became, Fruitful became this project for him and I to work on together too, that became very cathartic in a way where we could kind of like work through our own issues as we were building this platform and the system where we could match people one-on-one based on a bunch of different data points. I mean, how old are you? What's your diagnosis? Have you had a miscarriage? Are you someone who believes everything happens for a reason or no? Are you religious? Are you in the military? Are you a single mother by choice? You know, we ask all these questions in our onboarding, and then we're able to match you based on all this information you've given us with somebody who we think shares your worldview, has had similar experiences. If you have a specific genetic condition, if you have something you're dealing with your partner, we can match for that. And we have people in our database who want to help you. And so I think that is the really cool part about Fruitful, is anyone can join like a Facebook group and get a bajillion opinions about a bajillion different things. And, you know, people in those groups love making everything about them. But I think this is a unique experience where you're getting one-to-one peer support from someone who gets it and someone who gets you.
I think that is incredibly valuable. And I think it was a fantastic idea to come up with this. And so great that you had the idea, but then you also had somebody that had the know-how to actually implement this.
Oh, yeah. Well, if I hadn't been married to Brad, I don't think I would have, you know, gone through all, I would have been like, someone should make this. But I do think like it's a cool tool in your toolkit, you know, similar to going to therapy, similar to going to a support group, similar to creating your own, you know, Instagram handle where you chronicle your story and getting support there. I think what I've learned through this experience is that different types of support can feel helpful and then feel not helpful. And so I think you really need to be your own advocate and figure out what feels good to you. And offering people a lot of different ways and types of support is totally helpful, because someone's going to get value from one thing, but not another. Someone might not like the service at all. Someone else might be like, oh my God, it's amazing. So really just offering people as many tools as possible to like get through this.
Yeah. And I think this particular format is so cool, because you are taking so many different aspects of somebody's journey into account when you're matching them. And so it seems like, I think people really focus on like, oh, the emotional aspect of infertility and IVF, but there's a lot of other things that go into this journey. There's financial concerns, there's physical concerns, you know, there's time constraints, there's how are people doing this, working this around their jobs, like what stress is this placing on a marriage? So there are so many other things that really like need attention and discussion throughout this. So are those all things that people can get specific support for through Fruitful?
Yes. And I think we really thrive when we get the most information as possible from somebody. So when they can tell us, hey, I really want to talk to like someone who traveled to Barbados for their treatment, or like, hey, I really want to talk to someone whose husband had this type of cancer, or I want to talk to somebody who decided to stop treatment. I want to talk to someone who never had kids. Like, these are all like, the more specific you can get about who you'd like to speak to, the better we can do of matching you with somebody who better aligns like with that type of experience that you're looking to talk to. But I do think it's also really helpful when you're looking at a whole person and you're looking at all the aspects of them. You know, are you someone who's very type A? Are you someone who's chill? Are you someone who doesn't want to do IVF for religious reasons? Like, then we would take that into account. So that's the part where I think it gets really valuable, is for people who feel like, gosh, no one would be able to empathize with my specific situation. Like, yes, there are people out there who understand what you're going through and who want to support you. I mean, that's the beauty of the program too, is not only is it for people who are struggling with infertility, it's also for people who have been through the experience and are now on the other side, who feel so connected to this cause and want to believe that what they went through was for a reason. You learned so much on your infertility journey. You learned so much about your body. You learned so much about the process and the system and the questions to ask. And I think people, when they're done with that journey, really want that to have been for a reason and want to give back. And this is a great opportunity for people to be able to do that in a really meaningful way.
Absolutely, for sure. And it sounds like, based on all of these different things that you're taking into account to match people, you guys are probably not doing this 100% through algorithm. You're actually sitting down and looking through mentors and mentees and actually like matching people by hand.
Yeah, so it's a mix. So we do have an algorithm that kind of dwindles down our list. We have about 5,000 users right now. And so we do have an algorithm that kind of narrows down based on geography, age, diagnosis. Like, you know, we can set the parameters for what we want to search for. But the software will narrow it down to maybe like 10 to 20 options. And then, yeah, our team looks through and actively decides on each match. We click the button to match people. each person then gets a notification either through their app or through email that says, hey, you've been matched. And then you can talk one-on-one privately through the app. You don't have to give any personal information. You share like one sentence about your bio, and I think it's like your first name and your age. And then, yeah, you can disclose whatever you'd like. The information you provide to us is only used to make matches. It's not used for anything else. We don't share that with anyone. And so that's really the benefit too, is like when you're on Facebook or Instagram, I mean, none of that stuff is private. All that stuff is owned by these like big companies. And for us, we take it super seriously. We want to make sure we're getting you the best support possible.
Yes. And I want to also mention that men can join this too, can't they? So
yeah,
that I think is something that we think more about the need for women to get support through this journey, but it's hard for partners too. And it's difficult for them to find someone to talk to. And I feel like men are in a lot of cases even less likely to open up about what they're going through, especially with something emotional like this, and not knowing who to talk to about that. So yeah.
Yeah. Men, I think, men are like a whole other issue, because I think a lot of times they're conditioned and they think that they need to be 100% strong for their partner. And so I think they bury a lot of their own feelings about the process because they're trying to support their partner and they see that as their number one job versus like dealing with their own disappointment, their own loss, their own trauma, their own issues. You know, if they're having sperm issues, like how's that affecting their self-worth? Like, and so I do think, like, I think it's really hard for women in so many ways, and especially physically, like women are just asked to do so much more. But I think women in general have gotten a lot better at reaching out for help and community. I think men suck at that. And I think men in general have this machismo bro culture, and it makes it hard for men to be vulnerable, especially with each other. Sometimes it's easier, I know, for men to confide in their, you know, wives or girlfriends or sisters or, you know, the women in their lives they trust. But yeah, I think there's like a hugely valuable component that's missing with men, where they should be reaching out to each other to learn more about their bodies and learn how to support themselves and learn to process what they're going through too.
Yeah. So was it part of the original plan to also have men be involved in this, or was that something that kind of came along after the fact?
I think we always knew that they could benefit from the program. I think they were less of a priority because they just aren't looking as much for information as outwardly. So I think we knew that they could benefit, but it definitely wasn't like our top priority when we were trying to figure out, okay, who are our key users? Who do we need to design this for? Mm-hmm. I do think we could do a better job in the future of marketing this more to men. I think maybe only like 5-3% of the platform are men. And it's interesting because we do have a lot more men mentors in general than men who sign up for help. And I think like that's something too, where people oftentimes have an easier time talking about infertility when they're at the end of their story, or when there's an answer as like how things worked out, as opposed to like you're in the middle of it and you don't know what's going to happen. It can be really hard to talk about it then.
Yeah. I think it's easier to kind of like sum up your journey at the end of it and be like, okay, here's what all of it was for. Now I can take all of that and share as somebody who's already on the other side and kind of give people hope, as opposed to when you're in the middle of it, you're just kind of trying to keep your head above water. You're trying to survive. It's a lot more difficult to try to kind of give that sum up and say, here's what it was all for, to somebody when you're still in the middle of it too.
Absolutely. And I think I always felt a lot of social pressure in the middle of the journey to be positive, or I felt badly like I was bumming people out. If there wasn't like a happy ending, I felt badly. Like, and that was something I learned too, that when our first round of IVF failed, I learned like, oh my gosh, it sucks to give everybody bad news. Everyone sounds so disappointed. And it was really harsh because I felt like I was having to comfort other people when I was the one who had like experienced this loss. And it was just this weird social dance of, you know, telling people the bad news and having them, I'm so sorry. And you're like, it's okay, you know, blah, blah, blah. And in reality, people aren't feeling badly for you. They just want you to get what you want. Like, that's the thing that I think I misunderstood, is pity. And I didn't like that feeling of people feeling sad, or like I was disappointing them, or like my body had failed everyone that was rooting for us. It was more, we want Elise and Brad to have a baby because that's what they want. Not because like we care about like what their life looks like or because, you know, it's so important to the family, but it was like, oh, they clearly like really want this and you want your friends to get what they want.
Yeah, you do for sure. So you also, in addition to the Fruitful platform, have recently started a podcast as well. Tell us a little bit about the podcast, what types of shows you're featuring on there, what women and couples can expect from that. I believe it's called Been There, Injected That. Is that right?
It is. Yeah. So we started the podcast end of 2019. And really, it was an opportunity for us to share different stories about infertility. And so it's a mix. So some are stories like with actual people who are either struggling with infertility or have struggled with infertility. Some people are experts, so acupuncturists, nutritionists, holistic providers, REs, nurses, people who are really in the space. So we cover a range of topics, everything from dealing with a traumatic loss like a stillbirth to dealing with multiple rounds of IVF or what kind of questions you should ask at your first appointment to talking about endometriosis specifically. So they really do run the gamut. We're in the middle of planning season two now. So season one, I think there are 10 or 11 episodes that we just finished recording. And now we're looking to plan season two. And I think there's going to be more diversity in that season, more diversity in the different types of stories we tell, sharing more about embryo adoption, more about choosing to live child-free, more stories about those kinds of topics that maybe we didn't get to in season one. So the cool thing about infertility is that there are like so many different topics and stories and ways you can talk about this issue and so many different types of people who are willing to share their story and share how they kind of got to where they were or where they are. And so I think that's really what we're looking to do is, you know, be an additional tool, an additional voice. There's so many great podcasts and types of content that you can consume. And I'm a huge podcast dork. Like I love podcasts. And when we were going through infertility, I could not get enough. I was like listening to so many. And so I think originally when we were trying to decide, you know, should we have a podcast or not? I was like, well, there's already like so many great people in the space. But I also think there's so many things to talk about that I don't think it has to be limited to, you know, 5 to 10 voices.
Oh, I completely agree. I mean, there's so many different ways to approach this. And of course, different people are going to resonate with different hosts, with different guests, with different types of conversations. I mean, there are certain people that are really, I think, prominent in this community, and they'll end up on all the different fertility podcasts. And but the conversations are different each time. And the direction that the host takes the interview is going to be different each time. And so even if you hear similar people on different podcasts or there's similar topics being discussed, it's always going to be from a different angle. And I think it's going to benefit different people in different ways. And that's why it's so great to have different shows out there. That's like saying, oh, well, we have to limit the amount of doctors or holistic providers we have out there because the space is too saturated. It's like, no, there's enough for everyone.
Or like TV programming, like, oh, there are already a lot of comedies. It's like there, I think we've learned like with Netflix and Hulu and Disney Plus, like when this original content, like people are hungry and thirsty for this, for information and for stories and for things to connect with. And like you said, every single podcast has a different style, has a different tone. Some are more medical, some are more holistic, some are more about community. And I think it's really just about like finding what you like and finding the voices that resonate with you. And being able to like find that and cobble together kind of like your content bubble of people you trust and are learning from.
Yes, definitely. Well, this has been such an informative interview. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing a little bit about your story and talking about Fruitful. I'm excited about this as a tool, as a resource for women to be able to, and couples, of course, men as well, to be able to get the support that they need on this journey, because I do think that is still something that is, I think, not being put in the prominent place that it should be on the fertility journey. It's like you think about all the things that you need, and it's not just all the things that you need to get you pregnant. It's also the things that you need to support you to be able to get to that point and to stay sane and mentally and emotionally sound during that time. And this is such a great resource and tool for people to be able to do that.
Thank you. And I think it really is just about understanding like what works for you and being really honest with yourself about finding the tools that work and that you're excited about and ditching the tools that are not serving you. If being on Instagram leaves you feeling terrible and you hate it and you hate the stupid letter boards and you're over it, like, let that go. You know, if something, if there's a friend who you've been talking to who isn't helping you, don't go there anymore. Like, we are constantly evolving as people. We're constantly learning about ourselves and our own needs. And I think the best thing you can do is find ways to really ask yourself, what is helping me? What feels good? What doesn't? Sometimes I get there by journaling and I can figure out, okay, what am I actually needing today? Is it a walk around the lake by myself with a podcast I love? Is it, you know, talking to my mom on the phone for an hour? Is it finding a therapist that I trust and being able to make those appointments? Does that feel really good? What is that combination? And knowing that that isn't a static cure-all formula, knowing that you might have to do some adjusting there too, and that it's going to look different from your friends, your partner, anybody else, and just learning how to listen to your own needs and advocating for that.
That's incredible advice. Is there anything else that you'd like to share with listeners before we wrap up? Any other pearls of wisdom or anything else you want them to know?
I think just finding ways to be gentle with yourself and trying not to judge yourself. You know, we all have thoughts that are maybe not helpful or not positive or critical. And I think learning how to have that thought and let it go rather than ruminating on it and sitting on it and internalizing it. And I mean, that's just work that every human has to do all the time because we are so conditioned to be critical and to think harshly of ourselves. And some of us are more perfectionist-y than others. And I think the sooner that you can learn how to not judge your own thoughts and just say, oh, I'm feeling jealous that my friend is pregnant and I'm not. Now I'm going to let that go, you know, and not spin out into the, like, I'm a bad person. Why can't I just be happy for everyone else? Why do I make everything about me? Why, when is it going to be my turn? I don't deserve this. Like, figuring out how to have the thought, not judge it, and move on. Oh my gosh, I wish I learned how to do that years earlier. That's therapy. That's like years of therapy, figuring out how to do that. So, I mean, I think understanding that what you're going through is hard, it's valid, you're not alone. There are so many people struggling the same way you are, and really figuring out ways to feel good, especially right now, especially when the world feels really scary and out of our control. All we can do is try to control what we can, find things that make us feel good. That's pretty much it.
Well, that is awesome closing advice. And thanks again so much for being here. I really appreciated this. I know listeners are going to find this really valuable as well. So I appreciate you.
Yeah, thanks so much, Kristen. I appreciate you and everything you're building here too.
Thank you.